Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Restorative Justice in Legal Systems. Education and the Community is an edited scholarly collection on restorative justice as a practical framework for responding to harm in institutions and communities. Edited by Dr. Sandra Pavelka and Anne Seymour, the volume brings together international contributors who examine how restorative principles have developed across legal systems, education, youth justice, and community practice. Its purpose is not simply to define restorative justice, but to assess where it has worked, where implementation remains difficult, and how the field may evolve. The book is also positioned as a tribute to restorative justice pioneers, especially Dr. Gordon Bazemore, whose influence is associated with balanced and restorative justice in youth justice reform. The collection emphasizes relational practice, accountability, fairness, victim and community participation, and policy integration. It is best understood as a multidisciplinary professional and academic resource rather than a basic introductory handbook. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, restorative justice as a relational alternative to purely punitive systems. A central concern of the book is the shift from a justice model focused mainly on punishment toward one that treats harm as a relational and civic problem. Restorative justice asks what happened, who was affected, what obligations follow, and how repair can be pursued. This differs from conventional legal approaches that often concentrate on rule violation, culpability, and state-imposed penalties. The book presents restorative justice as a framework for fairness and accountability, not as a rejection of accountability itself. Accountability is understood more actively. People who cause harm are expected to recognize impact, participate in repair where appropriate, and develop prosocial responsibility. The relational emphasis also brings victims, families, schools, justice agencies, and communities into view. This matters because harm rarely affects only the direct parties. It can weaken trust, safety, and belonging. By framing justice around relationships and obligations, the collection explains why restorative practice has relevance beyond criminal justice. It can guide responses to school conflict, youth offending, workplace harm, and community disruption while still requiring careful structure, ethical safeguards, and attention to power imbalances. Secondly, implementation across courts, youth justice, schools, and communities. The book stands out because it follows restorative justice across multiple institutional settings rather than treating it as a single program model. In legal systems and youth justice, restorative practices may support diversion, conferencing, victim-offender dialogue, community accountability, and alternatives that reduce reliance on exclusionary sanctions. In schools, the same principles can shape discipline, classroom culture, peer conflict resolution, and responses to misconduct that avoid automatic suspension or isolation. In community contexts, restorative justice can support local problem-solving, healing processes, and participatory responses to harm. This cross-sector structure is important because implementation challenges vary by setting. Courts require due process, voluntariness, confidentiality, and coordination with statutory authority. Schools require staff training, cultural consistency, and alignment with discipline policy. Community practice requires trust, facilitation capacity, and sensitivity to victims and marginalized groups. By comparing these contexts, the collection shows that restorative justice is not a portable script. It is a set of principles that must be translated into procedures, roles, and safeguards suitable to each institutional environment. Thirdly, the role of law, policy, and institutional design in sustaining practice. Another major theme is the movement from isolated restorative programs toward policy and system reform. Dr. Sandra Pavelka is known for work on restorative justice law, policy, and implementation, and the book reflects that orientation. Restorative justice can remain fragile if it depends only on individual champions, temporary grants, or informal enthusiasm. For durable practice, institutions need clear authorization, training standards, referral pathways, evaluation methods, and administrative support. Legal and policy recognition can help normalize restorative options, clarify when they are appropriate, and protect the rights of participants. At the same time, the book treats policy integration as more than bureaucratic expansion. Poorly designed mandates can dilute restorative values, turn dialogue into a procedural requirement, or prioritize efficiency over meaningful participation. The value of institutional design lies in balancing structure with relational integrity. Systems must make restorative justice accessible while preserving voluntariness, preparation, safety, and participant voice. This focus gives the collection practical relevance for policymakers, court administrators, school leaders, and agency directors who need to move from aspiration to sustainable implementation. Fourthly, balancing the needs of victims, offenders, and communities. The collection repeatedly returns to the restorative justice commitment to balancing the needs of victims, people who caused harm, and affected communities. This balance is difficult because each group may enter the process with different expectations and vulnerabilities. Victims may seek information, acknowledgement, safety, restitution, or a voice in decisions that conventional systems often limit. People who caused harm may need a process that requires responsibility without reducing them to the offense. Communities may need ways to restore trust, address conditions that contributed to harm, and support reintegration. The book treats these interests as connected rather than interchangeable. A process that focuses only on offender rehabilitation may neglect victim experience. A process that focuses only on punishment may fail to repair harm or prevent recurrence. A process that invokes community without real participation may become symbolic. Restorative practice, therefore, requires preparation, skilled facilitation, and ethical attention to consent and readiness. The practical insight is that balance is not a slogan. It is an implementation challenge that must be designed into every stage of referral, dialogue, agreement, follow-up, and evaluation. Lastly, assessment of the field through legacy, evidence, and future development. The book is framed partly as a reflection on the journey of restorative justice, and partly as a forward-looking assessment of the field. Its tribute to figures such as Gordon Baysmore situates restorative justice within a history of youth justice reform, community accountability, and balanced responses to harm. Rather than presenting the field as settled, the volume asks what has worked, where growth is needed, and what comes next. This makes the collection more analytical than a promotional overview. It recognizes restorative justice as a growing global movement, while also implying that expansion brings risks, uneven quality, shallow adoption, lack of evaluation, and tensions between institutional control and community participation. The inclusion of international and multidisciplinary voices broadens the discussion beyond a single legal culture or school system. It allows readers to see restorative justice as a field shaped by practice, research, policy, and local adaptation. The future-oriented emphasis is especially useful because restorative justice is increasingly invoked in law, education, and community work. But its credibility depends on careful implementation, honest assessment, and continued development of standards. In conclusion, restorative justice in legal systems, education, and the community is most useful for readers who already have some interest in justice reform, education policy, youth justice, victim advocacy, or community-based conflict response. Scholars can use it to understand how restorative justice is being conceptualized across disciplines. Practitioners can use it to compare approaches and think more carefully about implementation, preparation, facilitation, and institutional support. Policymakers and administrators may find particular value in its attention to laws, policies. And the book also benefits educators and community leaders who want to understand restorative justice as more than a discipline technique or a mediation method. Its practical and intellectual value lies in connecting principles with settings courts, schools, youth programs, and communities each require different safeguards and forms of support. Compared with many books in the field, this volume stands out because it is a multidisciplinary edited collection with a broad institutional scope and a reflective purpose. It combines historical grounding, professional experience, international perspectives, and future-oriented analysis. It is not merely an introduction to restorative justice, nor only a manual. Its distinct contribution is showing restorative justice as a developing movement that must balance relational values with policy design, ethical practice, and evidence-informed growth. If you would like to support Dr. Sandra Pavelka, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.